Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Tori Bush and Richard Goodman, editors of The Gulf South, an anthology of environmental writing. It's a great pleasure to welcome Tori Bush and Richard Goodman to The Reading Life. They're the co-editors of The Gulf South, an anthology of environmental writing, which is an incredibly useful and interesting and timely book. Tori is a writer based in New Orleans and a PhD candidate at Louisiana State University. And Richard is an associate professor of creative nonfiction writing here at the University of New Orleans, and the author of many books, including my favorite, French Dirt, the story of a garden in the south of France. Richard, it's so good to talk with you.
It's so good to talk with you, Susan. Thanks for having me on.
Tori, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell me how the two of you came to collaborate on this anthology.
Well, Tori went to UNO, and I think through mutual friends, we figured out we both had an interest in environmental writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so sooner or later, we got together and we started talking. I think it was Tori's idea to put together a bibliography of environmental writing about, I think she started with Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And then we expanded that, realizing along the way that there wasn't such a thing. It didn't exist. And finally, at one point, after we had a considerable selection, we thought, maybe this could be a book proposal.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And so we put together a proposal and sent it out to the universities in the Gulf Coast. And thankfully, University Press of Florida said yes.
Now, there are so many issues to represent here: climate change, coastal erosion, the ravages of big oil, conservation, pollution. It just, you know, they just all pile up. So how did you prioritize the kinds of things you wanted to represent in environmental writing?
We're very lucky here in that we have a lot of experts sort of who are already thinking about either the environment or our relationship to it. So we surveyed, I'd say, about 60 scientists, artists, writers, journalists, activists across the board and asked them what texts they found most informative, most helpful for to develop their own thinking about the ongoing changing relationship and climate crisis around the Gulf. And so they gave us an original bibliography, I'd say about 200 books, and from there we continued to grow it. And it took a lot of time just reading through all these texts and really finding ones that stood out. We really strived to try to bring together a wide array of voices in this anthology because the Gulf itself is certainly not one place, but a web
right.
of many places tied together. And we wanted those voices to reflect that. And also, I think because climate change is such a multifaceted thing, that the voices and the genres and the approaches should also be multifaceted.
We had a couple of things that narrowed the field down almost automatically. First of all, the University Press said, you know, you can't do a 900-page book.
Right.
So let's give you the limit you have here, X number of words. So we knew that from the beginning. And secondly, we gave ourselves the chronological limit, which was the last 100 years. But we, in two cases, made an exception. So we already had those two limitations. And then we said that anything that we included in this book, we wanted to be readable, that people would enjoy reading it, not just there for the sake of, oh, you have to include this no matter what. So it had to be readable and enjoyable. We also wanted to try to see if we could get underrepresented writers into the anthology, because it's been the case that hasn't been the case in the past. So we made a concerted effort to find more women writers, African-American writers, Native American writers. We did the best we could, and I think we did a decent job. It's very hard when you go back because the publishing was a lot different back then.
Well, one of the things that's so great about this book is the broad sweep of it. You have such a range from historical and contemporary work, from fiction and poetry, even an excerpt from a graphic novel. So talk about that decision to include fiction and poetry.
You know, honestly, partially it's because I feel that sometimes when we discuss environmental issues, we can get sort of pigeonholed into one particular genre. I think journalists have a certain sort of rhetoric around climate change. I think even poets sort of develop their own world of language. And I think bringing together this variety of genres, I think it allows us to expand on the diversity of what's happening, on the diversity of experience of what's happening.
The graphic novel is amazing, and the whole thing is really astonishing. Of course, we couldn't include it all, but it gives it a nice punch. There's something that can be said in that way that can't be said in any other way.
Well, it's Josh Neufeld's AD. That's the graphic novel. And
yes,
it's post-Katrina, and his depiction of the flooded city is so unforgettable to me.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, the rest of the book, he's got different stories of different people who went through the storm. So you get Uptown, you get the Quarter, mm-hmm. and these different people that decided to stay and then what happened to them.
I'm growing to love graphic novels more and more and more as time passes. Now,
yeah,
you've selected excerpts from two of the major works, of course, John Barry's Rising Tide, The Great Mississippi Flood of 1927 and How It Changed America, and Jack Davis's book, The Gulf, which, of course, won the Pulitzer for its sweeping history of the Gulf Coast. Those are two of the real standards in environmental writing for our region, don't you think? The classics?
Oh, absolutely. And they're both so well written. Anybody that can take history like John Barry and Jack Davis and make it so lyrical and elegant and fun and make it seem like you're actually living it, reliving it.
Oh, yeah.
Such a gift.
Welcome back. My guests are Tori Bush and Richard Goodman, editors of The Gulf South, an anthology of environmental writing. You really stubbornly hung in there to include fiction, which I think is so important because we have such memories.
Yeah, and I think Zora Neale Hurston is a really foundational author for the Gulf Coast. Many people sort of associate her with New York, but of course she is from Florida and spent much of her time in this area. The excerpt we include is around the arrival of a hurricane and how the two main characters from Their Eyes Were Watching God sort of flee this hurricane as well as sort of the migrant workers in that area, how they dealt with it. So I think while we tend to read her texts as sort of these seminal American texts, I think that they also offer a lot in terms of how we think about our changing relationship to the environment over the last century.
And in addition to Zora Neale Hurston and Joy Harjo, you include such wonderful work by women who are such well-known writers now. Susan Orlean, Jessamyn Ward, Natasha Trethewey. There's really a plethora of writing by women.
Yeah, well, I feel that it's a very important thing.
Well, and also some are less well-known than others. I was really excited to read Jovita Gonzalez's work because I'd never read her.
Yeah. She is I would say, a less well-known literary figure from Texas who really sort of integrated her sort of indigenous background with sort of her understanding of how the environment functions, as well as sort of like blending in mythology with the narrative itself. I think she's a very fascinating figure that still needs quite a bit of study to be done on her.
There are 40 pieces in the book, and 17 are by women. We didn't quite get 50-50, but we came close.
You were very close.
Yeah, and I think that's not a bad proportion. I mean, it would have been great if it was 20-20, but as I say, we got close.
Well, also, some of them are so well-known. You know, Jessamyn Ward in Salvage the Bones, that's just such an amazing portrait of a storm It's one of the most amazing, powerful books ever. And then Natasha Trethewey's book, her post-Katrina memoir.
Yeah, I love that she's got that poem in there. It's just so nice because, again, poetry can express things that you just, it reaches emotions that prose just can't.
And how great to have Joy Harjo, too.
Yes, yes, our poet laureate.
Yes. Yes,
absolutely.
But then you went back to some of the women writers that we think of, you know, historically as being great environmental writers, like Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and Marjorie Kennan Rawlings. You know, the Marjories of Florida have done a lot of good.
They really have, in terms of the Everglades and making us aware of what's going on in Florida. I mean, Florida in itself, I mean, you could have in two or three books about the environment in Florida, what went on there. In fact, in Jack Davis's book, there's a wonderful section about land development in Florida and that insanity. And he writes about it so well. And it just is, it's depressing but fascinating in the same way. And these two women, I mean, you have some cases where the Everglades wouldn't be in the situation it were today if it weren't for, you know, their help.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making things aware. I love the fact that when she's writing about the Everglades, she goes into etymology of the word.
Yes.
That, to me, is always interesting. And then you just look at it, oh, it used to be two words. Why didn't I think of that? I don't know.
Well, the great thing about this book, and I'm sure that's something you have to balance, is that you're looking for a combination of the timely and the timeless.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, the pieces about Houston, about the storm there, that proved prescient in terms of the hurricanes that followed.
Right.
And I want to mention one piece that I found to be, because one of the other things we tried to do in terms of inclusiveness is not to say everybody has the same political beliefs, everybody has the same beliefs, period. So if you take Arlie Hochschild, Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right, she went down to the Lake Charles area and spent a lot of time there. And with, as I understand it, the most pro-Trump area in the United States, and ended up really coming with a solid and new appreciation of these people. She didn't necessarily agree with them, but she understood them. And I find that to be so lacking in a lot of our writing, just the idea of, well, let's just try to understand these people and see where they're coming from. And for her, what she found was that they felt no one ever listened to them. So her book is fascinating, and I'm glad that we have part of it.
I love that book. And, she grasped so, you know, brilliantly the divided nature of our country and how what we really need to do is talk to each other and what it takes to do that, to keep plugging away at that. She's an amazing writer, I think.
Oh, yeah. I admire her. I admire her courage, and I admire her. Just her pure ability to write. Well, I'm really glad you like the selection. I hope other people do, too. I mean, at the end of, you sort of think, okay, well, what can this do any good? You know, you're always thinking of that.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Tori Bush and Richard Goodman, editors of The Gulf South, an anthology of environmental writing. You seem to think it was really important to include journalism because this is up-to-the-minute reportage of what's going on these days. And so you've included people like Bob Marshall and Justin Noble.
Yeah, well, especially living in New Orleans, we have the privilege of having such great journalists here, and Bob Marshall being one of the best. And so I felt it was very important to not only provide a context in which we can sort of emotionally understand through fiction, through poetry, but then also have sort of the hard information as well of why this is happening. So we included Bob Marshall, Brian Jacobs, and Al Shaw's Losing Ground by The Lens and ProPublica from 2014. But then we also include some really, really great journalistic work from Texas, by Nina Satija around hell and high water from 2016. So there's just such a amazing amount of great environmental journalism happening. And so we wanted to balance out sort of the idea of how do we offer deep, informative excerpts as well as the fictional works and works of poetry and graphic storytelling that also tells sort of the lived experience as well.
So how did you first get interested in environmental writing?
Like yourself, I live in New Orleans, and we are a city that is ruled by the environment. And so I think when I looked around and thought about what was I most invested in writing about, it's really about writing the stories of how our world is changing. And I really believe that language allows us to sort of get in touch and lessen the distance between humans and the world. So I think that the language we use to narrate our world can transform how we think about and act in the future.
Well, are you satisfied with this book now that you're finished with it? I mean, does it do what you hope it does?
I think it's such a beautiful book, and I hope people read it and find something to love about it. I'm so grateful to Richard and all of the University of Florida Press for all the work they put into it. And I hope everyone will enjoy it as much as I have.
I hope everyone reads it because there's so much beautiful writing here. You know, even if you've read Rising Tide, you read this little bit of it again, and you're right there again. You know what I mean? It just takes you right back. And it's just a perfect taste throughout history of all this, you know?
It was so fun to read Rising Tide, which is such an amazing work.
Yeah.
And then to read other pieces like by E.L. Korfel, who's included in this anthology, who mm-hmm. was one of the characters in John Barry's.
I know. That was great.
And so you see the way everything is sort of like interwoven and interconnected. And I think it speaks a lot for, you know, how everything will continue to impact each other, you know, whether that's narratively or environmentally.
Well, it's certainly a book that will last. It's filled with great stories and important ones, too. You know, these are life or death issues for us now.
One of the things about this anthology that's slightly limiting, if you take Losing Ground by Bob Marshall, I don't know if you ever saw that in mm-hmm. its original form, but that was online. So what he had there was this amazing map of what Southeast Louisiana looked in 1930 and sort of like time lapse to today. And you could see this land disappear.
Yeah.
It's absolutely chilling.
And yet here we are.
No.
Hanging on.
Oh, indeed.
Well, I hope this book finds the broad readership it deserves. We've been talking with Tori Bush and Richard Goodman, the co-editors of The Gulf South, an anthology of environmental writing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Susan. It was so nice to talk with you.
Sometimes, just a sentence can inspire a book song as the songwriter applies it to her own life. Bare Bones by Madeleine Peyrou from her 2009 album of the same name was partially inspired by Buddhist writer Pema Chodron's When Things Fall Apart, Hard Advice for Difficult Times, when Chodron asked the age-old question, why can't we get down to the bare bones?
Taught me about how warm whiskey is in a cold ditch. And one more thing about good and evil, you can't tell which is which. Well, if the rest is lost to history, or maybe wasted on a fool like me, I've got these bare bones. Me something after all. Old Hamlet's done now, dead and gone. the bare bones, they give you that much after all. They preached the gospel down in Metairie. They preached it in school. Nothing but a gamble. It might or might not set you free. I guess my old man was hard to read, and I don't really know what I believe. But in these bare bones, there's something lovely after all.
What's on tap in the literary life this week? The Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival kicks off Friday, March 19th. The Writers' Retreat, March 19th through 21st, includes online writing workshops, author events, and a writing marathon. Delivering a keynote inspirational message is Robert Jones Jr. Others participating include C. Morgan Babst, Michael Byrne, Elizabeth Mickey Brina, Ethan Brown, Pamela Koloff, Lily King, Lee Camacho Rourke, Maurice Carlos Ruffin, Sonny Patterson, Sharon Rosenblum, and Katie Simpson Smith. Also included is an agent pitch bootcamp and a session by Kindle Direct Publishing with Goodreads. The following weekend, March 24th through 28th, you can see such varied writers as Megan Abbott, Augustine J. Carrero, Randy Fertel, Allison Galen, Matthew Griffin, Eliza Griswold, Lady Hubbard, Peggy Scott Laborde, Laura Lippman, Lauren Markham, John Cameron Mitchell, John Pope, Alice Quinn, Mo Rocca, Brian Sands, Kalamu Yassalam, Heather Ann Thompson, M.O. Walsh, Brian Washington, and many more. There will be many special events. The festival opens Wednesday, March 24th, with an online performance of Avu Kare Cabaret. Other events include the Tennessee Williams tribute reading, focused on New Orleans as Muse, and featuring Alan Cumming, Brenda Curran, Rodney Hicks, Anne Magnuson, Amy Ryan, Mink Stole, Blair Underwood, and more. Books and Beignets focuses on The Rose Tattoo by Tennessee Williams this year. There will be an interview with Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright John Patrick Shanley, and Brian Batt appears in conversation with Tennessee Williams scholar Kenneth Holditch. UNO Press will present poetry readings filmed on location from the book I Am New Orleans and a new memoir by Kalamu Yassalam. Virtual theater offerings include an original production, The Felt Menagerie, a Williams-inspired puppet comedy from the Tennessee Williams Theater Company of New Orleans, Teatro Sin Fronteras, Theater Without Borders, showcasing the voices of Latin creatives in New Orleans and curated by Jose Torres Tama, Tennessee Williams one-act plays from the NOLA Project and Le Petit Theater du Vieux-Carré. Other theater-related events include New Orleans My Muse with Kathy Randalls and Stephanie McKee, moderated by Monique Verdun. and a panel on the New Orleans Black Theater community with Tommy Myrick, Kalamu Yassalam, Lauren Turner, Kaya Karen Livers, and Nick Sly. Check TennesseeWilliams.net for the complete schedule. The Stone Center for Latin American Studies and Newcomb Institute co-sponsor an online conversation with Elizabeth Acevedo, poet, novelist, and National Poetry Slam champion. That's March 23rd at 6 p.m. Central via Zoom. Acevedo will present her third book, Clap When You Land, and we'll discuss her writing process and performance background. For more information, go to events.tulane.edu. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellas Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.